As a Sunday morning is our ritual at just after 9 o'clock to catch up with what's happening in and around the UK, as well as around sort of the areas around the UK, out in the Atlantic and up on the sort of Mediterranean Sea, touching on France and Spain and all of those areas, and looking at what's happening around there. Gavin Gray is with us this morning. Gavin, a very good morning to you, and welcome to a Sunday morning again.
Hey, Zane. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good. It's Easter weekend over here, so, you know, things have been relatively quiet, despite the fact that 1,000 people have already been arrested on the roads for various offences. I hope that we're going to have a nice, peaceful Easter weekend. Gavin, let's kick off with what's happening in France. And France is setting up a sort of mobile security force for schools. As they say, these schools are experiencing difficulties just a day after the head teacher of a Paris school resigned because of death threats to him.
Yes, yeah, so there is a real problem in French schools, it would appear, of how to enforce what has become law regarding Muslim dress. And this has been something that's been bubbling up for a long while now, and also particularly freedom of speech, freedom of expression. You'll remember that one school teacher, Samuel Paty, was decapitated on the street in a Paris suburb in 2010, and another one, Dominique Bernard, killed at his school 5 months ago. And that was both in relation to their teachings of religion and also how they were portraying the Prophet Muhammad. And these were teachers trying to sort of show children different types of education, different types of religion. And then in this most recent incident, where a head teacher approached three female students who were wearing the Islamic headscarf in school, covering their face. And the head teacher said, look, that's against the law. Please take them off. Well, two of the three did. The third pupil refused, and then later accused the head teacher of striking the pupil across the face, hitting them. Now, there was absolutely no evidence. Nobody else backed this up, including the other two students. And it was ruled that the head teacher hadn't struck this pupil. But in the meantime, they were the recipient of death threats and were being told that their family were going to be attacked, et cetera, on social media. And so the head teacher said, right, I resign, and wrote this really amazing resignation letter, saying what a wonderful time he'd had in some 40 years of education and how marvelous it had been, but felt that this was the time to step down because why should he jeopardize his own safety? Well, we then heard that the police were investigating the matter and this young girl was going to be charged. And now we learn, after all that background, Zane, that the government in France is to set up this sort of strike force, as it were, a mobile security force when schools got into difficulty. It will be composed of about 20 education officers, be deployed within 48 hours from the start of the coming school year, wherever local authorities need additional support, and will there be in an acute crisis with the aim of providing internal security, reassurance, and education skills. This is all about trying to really assure teachers that they're not on their own, that they would not be left hung out to dry. But when they've seen two of their members killed, a third one resigning because of this this issue, then I don't know how much it's going to go to reassuring them.
Gavin, these death threats seem to be all over the show because colleagues of an Iranian TV news channel presenter was actually stabbed outside his London home. And the claim, it follows heavy death threats made to the UK-based station.
Yes, so Iran International is a television station based in the southwest of London. And one of their most well-known presenters, age 36, Puria Zarata, was leaving his home in southwest London when he was attacked by a group of men who viciously stabbed him. One came from behind and attacked him while the other was sort of talking to him. And he has managed to survive it, amazingly. He was stabbed numerous times, but he has survived. He's being treated in hospital, and the last posting yesterday was of him with the peace sign, holding a peace sign up. But he believes, as do many at this station, who they say has received some heavy threats over recent months, They believe this is all part of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps targeting journalists and their families outside of Iran. Now, of course, the media in Iran is very, very heavily patrolled, as it were, and heavily censored. But outside of Iran, former Iranians have been saying what they say is the truth behind what's going on in Iran. Now, the Metropolitan Police here in London say the motivation for the attack has not yet been clear, but they do believe that his occupation, coupled with recent threats towards UK-based Iranian journalists, mean that it is being led by what's called the Specialist Counterterrorism Officers. It follows off the back of a former BBC World Service journalist. One of my colleagues, Simba Sabet, reported on Twitter or X that police had urged her to leave her home following the attack on this man. She'd written that Revolutionary Guards had attempted to assassinate her and a colleague last year. So the tentacles of the this group appear to stretch far and wide, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps appearing to potentially, anyway, be using their tactics in other countries to terrify or at least silence those who might be critical of them.
And the boss of the UK's biggest water company, Thames Water, says that bills need to rise by 40% by 2030 to pay for improvements. And this is not going to sit very well with people who receive those bills. And where will they find that money? Because in South Africa, it's easy. We go to the fiscus and we say, bail us out.
Aha, well, yeah, not in this particular case. And of course, household bills going up all over the place. I recently got my mobile bill, that had gone up, phone bills gone up, the local taxes have gone up. Yes, it's true, fuel payments have come down, but yes, water in Thames Water Patch, which is 15 million households, the biggest water company in the UK, servicing London and most of southern England, says bills will need to go up 40% to pay some 80 billion South African rand of investment into the business. Now, what's happened is that couple of decades back now, the water companies were privatized and much of the water companies fell into foreign hands in terms of foreign ownership. And investors had been due to pump in this 80 billion South African rand into the business over the next 2 years in order to pay for this big investment. So much of the water structure around London is still dating back to Victorian times and needs really massive updating. But the investors are saying, now hang on a minute, we're not going to pay this extra money in until we've heard from the UK government that we can raise our bills massively, because all these water bill increases have to go through the government here to be sanctioned. And the government has said, no, we're not letting you pay anymore. What you should have done is not pay your shareholders so handsomely over the years and save that money in order to invest in the infrastructure. I'm afraid it's looking like eventually the company could be re-nationalized, Zane. Imagine that.
That would set the cats among the pigeons, because, you know, water is, even down here in Cape Town, we have some serious water problems, and they're just spending, I think, just over 4 billion rand on one of the water treatment plants out in the sort of Plattekloof area coming down Milnerton. And it's always a challenge, because burst water mains and old water infrastructure always presents that particular challenge, but where the money needs to come from. And eventually, you know, people are just totally cash strapped, because I think the banks have just kept interest rates very high for a very, very long time. Moving on, and we're chatting to Gavin Gray this morning and catching up with what's happening out in the UK report. Spanish prosecutors, I never saw an end to this yet, you know, a finalization of this, but Spanish prosecutors want the ex-head of the country's football federation to actually be jailed for 2.5 years. Give us that background and where the story is at the moment, Gavin.
Yeah, very interesting this, Zane. So you'll remember a historic moment for Spain's women's football team when they won their first ever World Cup. And during the trophy presentation ceremony, this man, Luis Rubiales, who is the country's football federation, or was the country's head of the football federation, clasped his hands around one of the female players' heads and pulled her forward and planted a kiss fully on her lips. He was also criticized at the same tournament for grabbing his crotch when celebrating the win, standing next to the Spanish queen and her daughter. And the whole thing set off a chain of him being called sexist. And then he lost his job and then faces charges of sexual assault and coercion. Now, he said, look, she was entirely consenting. I know her. You will see she was smiling. So how come I'm facing the wrong end of the stick with the law here? Well, she said, I did not give you my consent. And it was quite wrong. We are treated very badly in Spain, sort of thing, you know, as women. So now, under all the prosecutions, having been forced to resign, denying any wrongdoing, he is wanted in court and will appear in court, one of coercion and one of sexual assault. The charges carry prison terms of 1 year and 18 months. And so this is extremely serious for him. And although he, as I said, denies any wrongdoing, this appearance in court will make headlines around the world. For what at the time? I don't know. Perhaps he genuinely did mean it as an innocent kiss of the celebration of joy. But I don't know. Unless they knew each other very well, it seems a bit odd.
And finally, soldiers and officers are now allowed to grow beards while serving in the British Army. It's a little bit late for that, Gavin.
Yes, I think you're right. I think a lot of people would think it's a bit late for that. Although I know beards are not everyone's favourite cup of tea, and indeed some believe they look scruffy. But I don't know. A well-kept beard appears to be okay, I think. But beards and moustaches, according to the Army, will be allowed from today. They must be neat, properly groomed, and will be routinely checked. You have been warned, Zane, you see. Now, the policy comes, as I said, into immediate effect, and the Army is the last of the armed forces here to allow it. The new directive really comes after many, many years of discussion about the Army's policy on facial hair and reverses an earlier discussion which refused it. And it's thought several Army leaders hope the new policy will attract new recruits. And I think what's really important is that single sentence. The Army is desperate for recruits, and it's not getting them for one reason or another. And maybe having facial hair is one of those reasons. Several foreign armies here in Europe, Denmark, Germany, Belgium, all allow troops to grow a beard. And it's interesting, in the British Army, if you were a Sikh or a Muslim or a Rastafarian, you were allowed to grow a beard as part of your sort of faith, belief, but you were told you could grow the beard as long as it did not put your operational effectiveness or health and safety at risk. In other words, it getting caught, I guess, in equipment and so forth. Anyway, it's all come about now. We're hearing just how many that may attract or how many within the Army will now grow a beard. Isn't it pogophobic, I think, is a personal dislike of beards. So maybe we're over that now, then.
Getting over your pogrophobia. took you guys a very long time to do that. Now, why would you want to go and do an Easter hunt in a British cemetery? And, of course, an Easter hunt in a British cemetery has been cancelled after social media backlash.
Yeah, so I think this one could get the old phone and social media going for you this morning, because then basically, this was up in Wrexham in the north of England, where the Friends of Wrexham Cemetery organized an Easter egg hunt in the cemetery for children. And it faced a real backlash. They said, the organizers said, look, it was a wonderful idea for young people to get to just know the cemetery and who were interested in local genealogy. And it also aimed to promote the preservation, the care and improvement of the cemetery as a place of historical value and interest, plus, of course, a community green space. They actually pointed out that the Easter egg hunt was only going to be in part of the cemetery and was going to be regulated by adults. And the part of the cemetery where it was going to be held had not had any deaths, rather, for the last century. So it was in a very old part of the cemetery, and nobody who had lost a loved one recently was going to be affected. However, many people just said, this is disgusting. We're encouraging children to climb on graves. There could have been damage, and it's just distasteful. So Friends of Wrexham Cemetery cancelled it. And now we have perhaps an Easter egg hunt in a more suitable place then.
Hmm. I thought if you were going to do it in the cemetery, you would probably have to do dark chocolate in the in hiding it in the cemetery. So that's a possibility. But but a shop owner in Orkney, just off Orkney Islands, actually just off Scotland, accidentally ordered way too many Easter eggs for his little store.
Yes, so a lovely story. The island of Sandy is one of the islands that collectively are known as the Orkneys, which lie off the coast of Scotland. 494 people live on Sandy, which was why when the local shop had a delivery of 720 Easter eggs, a few eyebrows were raised. I mean, that's obviously almost 1¾ each. And they're not little Easter eggs. These are quite big as well. Unfortunately, the owner of the shop, Dan Daffitt, had organized what he thought was a delivery of the total number of eggs. In fact, he bought boxes, that number of boxes of groups of eggs in big boxes. So he ended up with many more than he thought. And he thought, oh, crikey. I've got them here. They're on this island. It would cost a fortune to get them off the island again in air freight or on a ship. So the 39-year-old said, right, what I'm going to do is I will keep 620 for the local population to buy, but I will raffle in one go to one person, one lucky winner, 100 eggs. This quickly went on social media as being both amusing and potentially sucking the wind. And he's already raised well over more than 60,000 South African rand. The raffle, I think, is still going on, accidentally. The great thing about this is it's still going on. In fact, I think it's nearer now, about 70,000 South African rand. And the makers of the chocolates, Nestle, also heard about this and agreed to double any donations that the raffle made to the charity. So he now stands to raise a really very significant sum, potentially up to 200,000 South African rand, with the help of this last push fundraising deal. He said, what started off as a silly mistake on my behalf has brought so much fun, laughter and joy, and I'm really very happy for this. And with the help of the manufacturer, we're going to raise loads of targets. We've set a new target now of some 140,000 South African rand, and that's what they're trying to do in these last few hours. The money, incidentally, is going to go to a wonderful fund. It's going to go to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, or the RNLI, and they are the people, manned by volunteers who risk their own lives to go and rescue those in peril off the sea. And that is highly appropriate in those very, very stormy seas off Sandy, the Orkney Islands, off the Isle of Scotland. Perhaps, Zane, how many tickets shall I put you down for?
The team and I will take one.
And I bet you win.
Definitely. But we have to sort of, look at what the pound is going to cost us for one of those tickets.
Indeed. Yes. What is it? 20-something, just low 21, 22, 23 South African rand. But 100 chocolates, that's still plenty to share out among the office.
Gosh, they'll be so lucky when I share my chocolates with them in the office. But Gavin Gray, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Easter weekend and enjoy your time. And that's Gavin Gray with our UK report this morning. Anything from chocolates and how to turn a chocolate story around and make it into a resounding success that the people who are the manufacturers of this chocolate will double whatever you are collecting.